Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hi there, Mr. Herman and Mr. Corin. So today I'm going to use the podcast to ask pretty directly for your thoughts and any sage advice that Herman Poppleberry and you can offer regarding the current tenancy predicament or situation we find ourselves in. We've done previous episodes about I think the big picture stuff, which is hopefully when we're out of our current rental and looking back on this stressful, difficult time, we'll just see it as that. You tend to forget. I mentioned that I was in a crazy slumlording situation before of kinds where they literally ripped out my toilet. That was atrocious. But it's just kind of a dark, if slightly amusing, memory now. And this one, I hope, too, will be in the back mirror fairly soon. So we talked about the big picture things, which is, I think, besides our living situation currently, a much more significant topic for anyone following along with the podcast, about basically tenant protection laws in Israel, what they are, what the municipal and government ability to help renters is, and when those fail, what can we look to in terms of reform? Because my wife and I are both really eager to escape the renting jungle. But I feel very conscious of the fact that every year people are coming here who won't escape it or won't escape it for years. So I think we need decent tenant protection law with proper enforcement mechanism and with lots of teeth ASAP, because as we've discussed, renting, and I think this is where we go so horribly wrong here, at least in Israel, if we treat it like an investment commodity or we treat it like any other contract for services, we forget that it's not. It's about human shelter. And it requires extraordinary measures, legislation, and recognition of the power imbalance and the fear of tenants who are scared about being on the streets, literally. So what I'd like to do, Herman and Corin, I'm going to tell you the specifics of my situation, or of our situation, and ask your recommendations, because it's kind of a challenging position that we're in. So the 28th of December 2025 is when the Great Leak fiasco begun. I was in bed sleeping and I felt water dripping on my face. And I was firstly thinking this is a dream, but it's not. It was the beginning of a horror movie. It was coming down from the roof and we went up to our neighbors. There was a big, heavy rainstorm. And they were really nice. We're just trying to figure out where it's coming from. But we had like an amicable chat, trying to figure out the cause. We told them this was happening on our roof, and then we went to sleep, expecting, I think, that maybe after the rainstorm, it was just like a random thing got into some pipe and it was fine. But that was not what happened. We wrote to our landlord and told him what was going on. But over the course of the next 2 weeks, different people, so the landlord basically refused to do anything. He said it's not my problem. It's not my fault. There's a leak coming from the roof. It's someone else's fault. Other person, then the building committee, what we call in Israel, the Vat Bayis, everyone is pointing the finger at one another. We're just, you know, people trying to live. I have asthma, which kind of I mentioned because it makes it a little bit different. I definitely don't want to be in sleeping somewhere that is not safe for me. And I began documenting this because I thought this might be something we're going to get, you know, we need legal proof for. So I took photos every day, which was actually useful because you can really see how it's worsening if you have water intrusion. And what I noticed, my wife, I mentioned Hannah is an architect, so she's much more on top of all the, you know, what this column is, the material. But what I observed basically was that the water was spreading like across the ceiling and then reaching down to another wall and kind of accumulating at the bottom. So we were filling up water buckets with the drips from the roof, emptying those throughout the day. And this was going on for weeks. as I mentioned. Eventually mold sprouted, and that was when it got, I guess, we escalated, because we've been waiting, asking what's going on, can you take a look, to our landlord, sending him updates, nothing happening except seemingly recriminations going on. And that night I woke up with like an asthma attack, or the next night. I don't know, related to the new mold or not, but whatever the case may be, I said, wait, this is nuts. I'm not sleeping in this room with water dripping next to me, ricocheting off the bucket onto my body. So we moved out to the living room and sent a pretty stern message asking our landlord to provide a timeline for remediation. So the landlord ultimately visited the property and seemed pretty agreeable, saw that there was a leak going on. A bunch of people tried to fix it. He brought some water detection specialist. And the next day we got an email basically saying he's not going to fix anything. I'm conscious of the legal aspect of this here, so I'm not mentioning where we live or his name for that reason. But basically the next day we wrote us an email saying, we can't, it's not my fault, it's the other people's fault, I'm not doing anything. You were also, like, you weren't nice to me, you've been really unpleasant people. A bunch of really untrue and nasty and random out of the blue allegations. So it seemed like we were kind of being thrown under the bus. One day he comes in and tells us, I'm going to fix it in a matter of days. The very next day he writes us an email saying this, basically pretending that conversation never happened. Fortunately, I recorded the conversation, so we have it on audio, all the commitments. But unless he's a My Word Prompt subscriber, he isn't aware of this fact. Anyway, we were at this point just wanting to, he also wrote to us the next day saying, I'm not extending your lease. So I said, all right, well, that kind of decides it. So we're kind of reacting to these events, but we also need shelter. His response, the landlord's response when they were looking at the room was kind of, well, you can, if you can disconnect this room psychologically and physically from the apartment, you can continue to live here. Otherwise, you have to leave. And the huge disconnect that we felt at numerous times in this experience, and even with people who were very helpful, was people acted as if finding a new place to live was just like ordering a pizza. It's not. It's in Israel, in Jerusalem, an immensely arduous process. Not only do you have to move, which is super expensive, you have to usually engage the services of a realtor, view properties, be approved. It's anything but simple. It's weeks of drudgery. So we, after sleeping on the couch for a week and calling every relative we could, found someone with a place. So we moved there for, I think, 2 weeks in total. We were sleeping somewhere else with Ezra, our 6-month-old, in tow. During the diagnosis attempts, they eventually succeeded in stopping the leak. But what I was concerned by was the fact that there was still mold. The paint was like, a lot of it was destroyed, just bubbled up. Significant weeks of water damage had occurred, and there was holes in the pillar next to our bed. It didn't strike me as safe to sleep there as an asthmatic at all, especially after you already had asthma exacerbation. The landlord at this point says, I'm not going to talk to you anymore. No, I was writing emails saying, please tell us when you're going to remediate things. And the assessor came, and we think said, basically, this is going to take months to dry. So we don't have any alternative accommodation, never was offered at any point. So we have to go and consult a lawyer because we've no idea. The landlord also says you can't remediate anything by yourself, which it turns out was illegal for him to state that. But until we met with a lawyer, we're thinking it's catch 22. We can't fix it ourselves. We can't just leave as he wants us to, and we have to pay rent. So we had a very helpful consultation with the lawyer and clarified our rights and what we can do. And basically, as the landlord then, to top it all off, eventually writes us in an email saying, I'm not going to speak to you anymore about this. I'm done, basically. So the landlord has left us with a room with bubbling paint, water damage, mold, and I think his last advice was just buy some spray. So we eventually, after clarifying our legal rights and the fact that we need somewhere to live until the summer when the tenancy's over, decide that we're going to move our stuff back and try to get the room better. So my wife does some hole filling or covering it up and cleaning up and whatever. And I sleep there. But the next day, I wake up feeling like, again, my asthma is horrible. And I feel like I've kind of got a flu of sorts. So I say, okay, the room isn't quite ready yet. So I go back to the couch. We're running a fan. We're sleep, you know, we've cleaned up the mold that we could see, but I don't know. Just to me, it doesn't feel. Anyway, last night I tried again. It's not very comfortable sleeping on the couch after 3 weeks. And the same thing happens today. So now I've had two exposures and I'm pretty sure that this is caused by the room. Same thing, flu-ish, whatever. So I'm going to the doctor in a day or two just to get the medical advice. Like I've already started Singulair on top of my daily inhaler. And just to know like anything, maybe I need a short course of steroids, but just to keep as healthy as I can for my family until we're out of this place. So that's our current situation. We're very unclear as to if there's any specialist or remediation we can do that'll actually meaningfully help. I hate to feel like I'm being dramatic or a prima donna by saying I think my asthma is reacting to that room and it does not feel safe for me to sleep there, even if the smell is almost gone and there was a definite smell for a while. And I'd be 99.9% sure that it's not psychological, which I know some people will say. I literally feel fluish and run down and tired, and the breathing lets up after a few hours, but when I wake up, I'm really tight. So I'm going back to the couch tonight, but clearly I don't think I can sleep on a couch for the next 6 months until our lease is over. Herman and Corn, we need some short-term help as well as some as a medium and long-term solution to our housing thing. But what would you do if you were me in the short term just to try and make the best of the situation, and any things we can do, whether it's HEPA filters, particular specialists, any help we can get really within the bounds of this challenging legal position to just make our lives bearable until we leave. Over to you.
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am joined as always by my brother.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And today, we are skipping the pleasantries because we have a bit of a crisis on our hands right here at home. Our housemate and friend Daniel sent us a voice memo that is honestly pretty distressing. It is about the rental situation he and his wife are dealing with here in Jerusalem.
Yeah, it is a tough one. For those of you who do not know, we all live together in Jerusalem, and Daniel has been dealing with this massive roof leak since late December. We are talking about water dripping onto his face while he sleeps, mold growing on the walls, and the landlord basically just shrugging it off. Today is January 31st, 2026, and this leak started back on December 28th. That is over a month of living in a swamp.
It is the classic rental jungle story, but with a really dangerous health twist. Daniel is asthmatic, and he has been sleeping on the couch for 3 weeks because the bedroom has become a respiratory hazard. It is a mess of legal, technical, and medical issues all rolled into one.
So today we are going to dive deep into what you can actually do when your home becomes a health hazard. We will look at the legal rights of renters in Israel, the science of mold remediation, and the specific tools like HEPA filters that might actually make a difference while you're stuck in a bad situation.
Exactly. And I have been doing a lot of reading on the Fair Rental Law, which was passed in 2017 as Amendment No. 6 to the Tenancy Law. Believe it or not, there are actually very specific protections for this kind of thing. But knowing your rights and getting a landlord to respect them are two very different things.
Right, and I want to start with the immediate health aspect. Daniel mentioned he feels like he has the flu and his asthma is flaring up. That is not just a coincidence. Herman, when we talk about mold in an old Jerusalem stone building, what are we actually dealing with? Is it just a bad smell, or is there something more insidious happening?
It is definitely more insidious. When you have a major leak like the one Daniel described from late December, the water gets trapped behind the plaster and in the insulation. In these old buildings, you often have layers of materials that act like a sponge. Once that moisture stays there for more than 48 hours, you are almost guaranteed to get fungal growth. The most common ones are Aspergillus and Penicillium, but the real worry is Stachybotrys tartarum, which people know as black mold.
And that is what produces mycotoxins, right?
Precisely. These are toxic secondary metabolites. They are not just sitting on the wall, they are being released into the air as spores.
When Daniel says he feels like he has the flu, that is a classic symptom of mold toxicity or a severe allergic reaction. For an asthmatic, those spores act as a constant trigger for bronchial inflammation. Even if you cannot see the mold, if the wall is damp and you can smell that musty odor, the concentration of spores in the air is likely through the roof.
It is interesting that he mentioned the landlord told him to just buy some spray. That feels like such a superficial fix for a structural problem. If the water is still in the walls, a surface spray is not going to do anything, is it?
Not a thing. It is like putting a band-aid on a broken leg. You might kill the spores on the very surface, but the mycelium, the root system of the mold, is deep inside the porous materials. As long as the moisture content in the wall is above 15 or 20%, the mold will keep coming back. And in Daniel's case, the leak was not fixed for weeks. That means the entire substrate is saturated.
So let's talk about the legal side for a second. Daniel mentioned he consulted a lawyer, which is definitely the right move. But for our listeners who might be in similar spots, what does the law actually say about a property being unfit for habitation?
The 2017 Fair Rental Law explicitly defines what makes an apartment unfit for residence. One of the key criteria is a defect that poses a real danger to the health or safety of the tenant. A major structural leak and widespread mold growth definitely qualify. Under the law, the landlord is required to fix any defect that was not caused by the tenant within a reasonable time frame. For something urgent like a roof leak, the law generally expects action within a few days, not a month.
But here's the friction point. The landlord is blaming the building committee, or the Vaad Bayit, and the neighbors. In these Jerusalem apartment blocks, that kind of finger-pointing is incredibly common. Does that excuse the landlord from his responsibility to Daniel?
Not at all. Legally, Daniel's contract is with the landlord, not the building committee. The landlord is responsible for providing a habitable space. If the roof is a communal area, the landlord has to deal with the Vaad Bayit to get it fixed. But he cannot just tell Daniel it is not his problem. He is still the one collecting rent for a room that is literally dripping water on the tenant's face.
It is frustrating because Daniel and his wife are essentially being gaslit. The landlord says he will fix it, then sends an email saying he won't, and then refuses to extend the lease. It feels like a retaliatory move because they are asking for basic repairs.
It almost certainly is. And while the law protects against some forms of retaliation, it is very hard to force a landlord to extend a lease if they do not want to. But in the short term, Daniel has the right to demand a reduction in rent proportional to the loss of use of the apartment. If one bedroom is unusable, that is a significant percentage of the square footage.
Okay, so let's get into the practical side. Daniel is stuck there until the summer. He needs to sleep. He tried moving back into the room after some surface cleaning and felt sick again. What are the actual remediation steps that can make a difference in an old stone building like that?
First, we have to talk about air quality. The goal is to reduce the spore count to a level where his immune system can handle it. This is where HEPA filters come in. HEPA stands for High Efficiency Particulate Air. To be true, HEPA, a filter must capture 99.97% of particles that are 0.3 microns in size. Mold spores are typically between 3 and 40 microns, so a good HEPA filter will catch them easily.
But not all air purifiers are created equal, right? I have seen those small ones at the electronics store that claim to do everything, but they are about the size of a toaster.
Yeah, those are mostly useless for a situation this severe. For mold remediation, you need to look at the CADR, which is the clean air delivery rate. You want a machine that can cycle the air in the room at least 5 times per hour. For a standard bedroom in Jerusalem, you are looking for a CADR of at least 200 or 300 cubic meters per hour. Look for brands like Blue Air or Kawe, which are widely available in Israel.
And what about the specific type of filter? I have heard people talk about age 13 versus age 14.
H13 is the standard for medical-grade HEPA. It is what you want. Some higher-end models also include an activated carbon filter. That is crucial for Daniel because the carbon will soak up the VOCs, or volatile organic compounds, which are the gases that mold produces. That musty smell? Those are microbial VOCs. A HEPA filter alone won't catch the smell, but carbon will.
So if Daniel puts a high-quality H13 HEPA filter with a carbon stage in that room, is it safe for him to sleep there?
Not necessarily. It is one part of the solution. He also needs to control the humidity. If the room is damp, he needs a dehumidifier. He should be aiming to keep the relative humidity below 50%. If it is higher than that, the mold will continue to thrive and release spores even while the filter is running. It is a constant battle.
I'm curious about the cleaning process he mentioned. His wife, who is an architect and knows her way around buildings, did some cleaning and hole filling, but Daniel still felt sick. Is it possible that the mold is actually inside the air conditioning unit?
That is a huge point, Korn. In Israel, those wall-mounted mini-split AC units are everywhere. They are notorious for harboring mold. If the room had a major leak, the humidity inside the AC unit would have been through the roof. If he turns on that AC, he might be blowing concentrated spores directly into his face. He needs to check the filters and the internal fins of that unit. If there is black gunk in there, that is a major source of the problem.
So he should probably get a professional AC cleaning on top of everything else. But let's look at the wall itself. The landlord suggested spray. We know bleach is the common go-to, but I've read that bleach can actually make mold worse on porous surfaces like plaster or stone. Is that true?
It is absolutely true, and it is a mistake almost everyone makes. Bleach is mostly water. When you spray it on a porous wall, the chlorine stays on the surface, but the water soaks into the wall. The chlorine kills the surface mold, but the water feeds the roots deep inside. A few days later, the mold comes back even stronger. You are much better off using a specialized antifungal solution or even high-concentration white vinegar, which can penetrate porous materials better than bleach. Just be careful, vinegar can etch some types of natural stone, so test a small area first.
That is a great tip. I think most people just reach for the strongest smelling chemical they can find. But what about the professional side? Dano asked about specialists. In Israel, who do you even call for this? Is there a specific type of inspector?
There are air quality labs that can do spore counts. They will take a sample of the air in the room and a control sample from outside and compare them. If the indoor count is significantly higher, you have a documented health hazard. This is crucial for legal reasons. If Daniel wants to withhold rent or sue for damages later, he needs data, not just his own feelings.
And what about the Vard Bayit situation? They are refusing to pay for the roof repair. In a building where everyone is an owner-occupant or a renter, it can get really nasty. Is there a municipal body that can step in?
There is. Most cities in Israel, including Jerusalem, have a department for dangerous buildings. If a leak is structural and affecting the safety of the residents, the municipality can actually issue a repair order. If the building committee ignores it, the city can perform the repairs themselves and bill the owners through their property taxes. It is a slow process, but it is a powerful lever.
That seems like something Daniel should definitely look into. It takes the pressure off him personally and puts it on the city to enforce the law. But man, the stress of this. He has a 6-month-old baby, he is sleeping on a couch, and he feels like he's being kicked out of his home.
It is a massive psychological burden, and that is part of why I think the HEPA filter is so important. It is something he can control right now. If he gets a high-end unit and runs it on max for a few hours before bed, he might actually get a decent night's sleep. And for an asthmatic, that rest is vital for the immune system to recover from the exposure.
I want to touch on the self-help aspect of the law. I remember we discussed this briefly in a past episode regarding tenant rights. Can a tenant in Israel pay for the repairs themselves and then deduct it from the rent?
This is a very tricky area. The law does allow for it under certain conditions, but it is risky. You have to give the landlord formal notice and a reasonable opportunity to fix it first. If they refuse, you can perform the repairs and offset the cost. However, for a roof leak, the cost could be thousands of shekels. If the landlord disputes it, they could try to evict you for non-payment of rent. Given that Daniel's landlord is already being difficult, I wouldn't recommend doing this without a lawyer's explicit guidance on every step.
Right, because you don't want to give them a reason to win an eviction case, especially since Daniel wants to stay until the summer. It is about making the place livable enough to survive the next few months.
Exactly. It is a survival strategy at this point. I would also suggest Daniel looks into a high-quality dehumidifier. Not a tiny one, but a compressor-based unit that can pull 10 or 20 liters of water out of the air per day. If he can drop the humidity in that bedroom to 40%, the mold will go dormant. It won't die, but it will stop growing and stop releasing as many toxins.
That makes a lot of sense. So we have HEPA filters, dehumidifiers, professional air testing for documentation, and checking the AC unit. What about the medical side? Daniel is seeing a doctor, which is good. But are there specific tests for mold exposure?
There are. He can ask for an IgE allergy panel specifically for molds common in the region. He can also look into testing for mycotoxins in his system, though that is more specialized. The key is to have a medical record that links his symptoms to the environment. If his doctor writes a letter saying his asthma is being exacerbated by the mold in his home, that is a very powerful piece of evidence in any legal dispute.
It is amazing how much of this comes down to documentation. In every one of these rental horror stories we hear, the person who wins is the one with the most photos, the most emails, and the most professional reports.
Absolutely. Daniel mentioned he has been taking photos every day. That is perfect. He should also keep a log of his symptoms. January 15th, woke up with chest tightness, slept on couch. It sounds tedious, but when you are sitting in front of a judge in small claims court, or the Mefikake al-Hamekarkane, which is the supervisor of land registry who handles these disputes, that log is invaluable.
Wait, the supervisor of land registry? That is who handles building disputes.
Yes, in Israel, the Mefakak is a judicial official who has the power of a magistrate court judge, but specifically for disputes within apartment buildings. This includes things like the Vad Bayit refusing to fix a roof. It is often faster and cheaper than going through the regular court system. If the landlord won't act, Daniel can actually file a claim there against the building committee or the landlord. He should also check out Tarbid Hadir, which is an association that provides mediation and legal advice for these exact scenarios.
That is a great piece of specific advice. I bet a lot of people don't know that office even exists. It sounds much more targeted than just filing a general lawsuit.
It is, and they deal with this exact scenario all the time. The Roof Leak versus Building Committee is a classic of the genre in Israeli property law.
So, let's pivot a bit. Daniel is worried about being dramatic, or a prima donna, as he put it. I think that is a common feeling when you are dealing with invisible threats like mold. But his body is literally telling him the room is unsafe.
He is definitely not being a prima donna. Mold sensitivity is a real documented medical condition. Some people are genetically more susceptible to mycotoxins because of how their body processes certain proteins. It is called the HLA-DR gene, and about 25% of the population has a variation that makes them unable to effectively clear mold toxins. For those people, even a small amount of mold can be devastating.
That is fascinating. So it really isn't just in your head. Some people are literally built to be more affected by this stuff.
Exactly. It is a biological reality, and when you add asthma on top of that, you are looking at a serious health risk. Chronic exposure to mold can lead to permanent lung damage or the development of new sensitivities. Daniel is doing the right thing by listening to his body and staying out of that room.
I think it's also worth mentioning the why behind the landlord's behavior. We see this a lot in Jerusalem. These buildings are old, the owners often inherited them, and they don't want to spend a cent on maintenance. They see the property as a pure cash cow.
And the market is so tight that they know they can find someone else who might not be asthmatic or who won't complain. It is a predatory dynamic. That is why the 2017 law was so important, even if enforcement is still catching up. It was meant to curb this exact kind of slumlord behavior.
So, if you were Daniel, what would be your top three priorities for this week?
Priority number one, buy the best HEPA filter he can find. Don't cheap out. Look for H13 medical grade. Priority number two, get a formal medical letter from his doctor linking his symptoms to the dampness in the house. Priority number three, send a formal registered letter to the landlord and the Vad Bayit through his lawyer, citing the fair rental law and the specific health hazards. That sets the legal clock ticking.
And what about the room itself? Should he try to seal it off?
If he isn't sleeping in there, he should keep the door closed and maybe even put a draft stopper at the bottom of the door. If the AC unit in that room is connected to a central system, he should make sure it is not circulating air to the rest of the house. He needs to treat that room like a containment zone until the humidity is down and the air is filtered.
It is a lot for one person to handle, especially with a young family. But I think having a plan makes it feel less like you are just a victim of circumstances.
Definitely. And Daniel, if you are listening, you've got this. It is a marathon, not a sprint, but there are tools and laws on your side. You are not being dramatic, you are being a responsible husband and father by protecting your health.
Well said, Herman. I think we have covered a lot of ground here, from the catter of air filters to the specific judicial officials in Israel who handle roof leaks. It is a weirdly specific set of knowledge, but that is what we do here.
Guilty as charged. I genuinely enjoy digging into these technicalities, especially when it can help someone we care about. This whole situation really highlights the need for better tenant protections and more awareness about indoor air quality in these older Mediterranean cities.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, if you have ever dealt with a rental jungle story of your own, or if you have found a specific tool that helped you manage mold or air quality, we would love to hear about it. You can get in touch through the contact form at myweirdprompts.com.
Yeah, and while you are there, you can search our archive for other episodes on tenant rights or building science. We have covered a lot over the nearly 400 episodes we have done.
And hey, if you are finding this information helpful, or if you just enjoy our brotherly banter, please take a second to leave us a review on your podcast app or on Spotify. It really does help the show reach more people who might be stuck in their own weird situations.
It really does. We see every review and we appreciate them.
All right, I think that's it for today's deep dive. Daniel, we are rooting for you. Hopefully, by the time summer rolls around, this will all be a distant, albeit very damp, memory.
Exactly. We will be here to help with the move when the time comes.
Thanks for listening to My Weird Prompts. You can find us on Spotify and at myweirdprompts.com. I'm Corn.
And I'm Herman Poppleberry. Until next time, keep your air clean and your humidity low.
See ya. Woo!
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.